It's whenever you're listening to this, and you know what that means. You're listening to the WrestleWolf podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Damian Gibson, DMD. And we've got quite a bit to get through today. Dynamite review, managed to score myself a spot in the media call with Tony Khan. Yes, that Tony Khan this morning. So I'll talk you through the conversation that a group of us had with him at 6 a.m. Melbourne time this morning, but that was great to be a part of. Some interesting news coming out of that already, and then we're going to do a quick preview of Full Gear, the pay-per-view that's happening Saturday night stateside, Sunday afternoon Australian time. And for the rest of you guys who listen in Europe and stuff, you'll have to work it out for yourself. I'm not a world clock. That's not why we're here, baby. All right, let's get into this. Bryan Danielson versus Rocky Romero with the Orange Cassidy and the Best Friends in tow. So, Orange Cassidy has been invited to join Chaos. Now, I've listened to a few podcasts already, and I don't know if Dynamite did a great job of explaining it either. Which happens quite a bit with any New Japan crossover stuff. There's a lot of people who aren't watching New Japan. They're not watching Japanese wrestling for a couple of reasons. One, you've got to subscribe to another network and that costs money. But two, the New Japan website is actually quite difficult to navigate, even once it's translated into English. So let me try and explain some stuff to you. So the Rainmaker is the leader of Chaos. He's invited Orange Cassidy into their faction, which probably means the Rainmaker is going to be coming to America. And that's amazing. I thought that Orange Cassidy might be going to New Japan to do some stuff with Okada, but Karachawa Okada. I'm not very good with Japanese names, so I'm just going to call him Okada or the Rainmaker. He's a big deal in New Japan, and it would be interesting to see if he shows up at Full Gear, seeing they've only given it like a week's notice, and whether he would be taking on Bryan Danielson, maybe? Who knows? Anyway, it was great to see Rocky Romero on this. So, and Chaos are his faction, and they're kind of, they're like the face faction that go up against Bullet Club a lot of the time. There's way more lore and history to it than that, and there's a lot of people who have much better knowledge of Japanese wrestling than I do, but that's essentially, that's all you need to know for this. Orange Cassidy has been asked to join Chaos by Okada. That's a big deal. Ring of Honor handshake between these two, which is pretty cool as well. It was a great technical match, as you would expect. I'm always a sucker for that. It's sort of swapped, you know, the ascendancy in this match swapped between the two wrestlers, and it was nice to see that. Rocky Romero has been around for a long time, doing a lot of stateside stuff for New Japan and also on the English commentary team for Japanese, for New Japan stuff. So if you've ever watched an English translation or English broadcast of New Japan stuff, you would have heard Rocky on that. And he's great. He loves the sport. He's, but also really gifted and technical wrestler. So 4 stars for this. Not really telling much of a story, you know, besides that Danielson is great and can beat the best that New Japan has to offer as well, and teasing that Rainmaker versus BD match, which I'm pretty sure will be happening now, with Orange Cassidy involved in some shape or form, although there was a development with Orange Cassidy that was very disappointing. Pretty much the only disappointing thing on this Dynamite episode, full stop, Inner Circle jumped by American Tag Team. The guys at What Culture talk about an invisible wall when promos happen, and I really like that as a tool to explain that, you know, a lot of the time when promos happen, it is, you know, there's a part of you watching it going, why don't these guys just come down and beat the shit out of these guys, you know? And that's what happened here. Dan Lambert, Inner Circle jumped American Tag Team. So we're jumped by the American Top Team. Dan Lambert power bombs Jericho, well, you know, in inverted commas, power bombs Jericho through a table, puts Jericho in the Walls of Jericho, but then later on calls it a Boston Crab because you fucking idiot marks don't know what that is, and he does because he knows wrestling better than you, even though he's an MMA guy. I took this to mean, you know, I know he was getting help and stuff, but I sort of took this storytelling with Lambert in particular to be, you know, that obviously he's a heel and he doesn't understand that he's not great at wrestling, but also that, like, don't count him out. You know, I mean, he's got four people in the ring who know what they're doing, and he's not going to just be a complete pushover, but I would expect that match. I would expect Lambert to maybe get some comeuppance in the match. But what I did like about this, that there wasn't a 10, 15 minute promo that had some sort of like veiled homophobia or misogyny. You know, I know a lot of people tart and roll their eyes when I talk about that, but that's definitely been happening for weeks. You know, anyone who's a serious commentator on wrestling has pointed that out. Unfortunately, I think when Jericho is doing promos where he is given a lot of creative freedom, we're going to get bits and pieces of that. It's just a hangover of his age. But look, you know, people seem to love it. So, yeah, I don't know what that says. Anyway, I liked this more than I've liked anything to do with this feud, because it showed that these professional killers in MMA fighters, people who legitimately fight in UFC, can beat the shit out of people. Because we haven't, I mean, we've seen bits and pieces of that, but this is really what should have happened, you know? And it will make, you know, if the Inner Circle win, which we assume that they will, right? It makes that win even bigger. So I liked this. Oh, 4 stars for the Bryan Danielson, Rocky Romero match, by the way, and 3 stars for this promo. I thought it was an elevation in everything else. I mean, I gave 0 stars last week, so it's a huge jump from my thoughts last week to this week. I enjoyed this. If there had been more of this and less bullshit, you know, penis measuring going on in the promo, then in the promos, I might have been a lot more on board. I am slightly on board for this match now. And look, you know, Jericho usually puts these, it will be a cinematic match of sorts, I assume, and Jericho usually puts these together and is quite good at them, so it'll be an entertaining match. But now that we've actually got a little bit of brutality from the MMA guys, I'm much more into it, you know. Okay, TJ and Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker, Rebel and Jamie Hayter. I think trios might be a good move for the women's division. As long as the matches are slightly longer. You know, you don't want to keep women's matches at 5 minutes and then make them trios matches just to get more women on the show and then point and say, well, you know, we have up to 12 female competitors a show on. Yeah, there's some interesting stuff with women and AEW coming up, so I'll hold off on that. Look, I'm sorry, but Anna Jay is the weak link here. I heard some criticism towards Jamie Hayter. Mate, I don't know what match you're watching. If you think that Jamie Hayter, look, I'll call it out. It was Sidgwick and Hamlet on What Culture who were saying that there are some people in AEW who need to go out and do the rounds for 6 to 12 months. I disagree with that. But I think if you're watching this match and thought it was Jamie Hayter and not Anna Jay, I'm not quite sure we were looking at the same thing. So maybe we weren't. Maybe we were looking at different technical aspects. But what I find with Anna Jay, and I know that some people will complain they get a bee in my bonnet about certain people and just keep going after them, but it's because I keep saying the same thing. So I can only comment on what's put in front of me every week. Anna-Jay doesn't get to the spots on time, I don't believe her. That's the main thing, you know, like, it's about believability when you're watching a pro wrestling match. And you, if you can suspend your disbelief while someone's in the ring, great. And there are people in this match who do that really well. Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker, to a lesser extent, Ty Conti. Anna Jay, not at all. And I think, you know, Jamie Hayter is streaks ahead of Anna Jay. Having said all that, I liked Tony barracking for Britt Baker on commentary. I thought that was a nice bit of continuity. And Tay Conti getting the win here while sort of staring at Britt Baker raises the stakes a little bit. And, you know, it allowed Britt to show that she's, you know, worried about Tay Conti, which builds her up in all of our minds. I just thought this was solid. It was solid, but there's still people who are a part of the storyline that don't really need to be, that are tying it down a little bit. But still, 2.5 stars. For this, I thought it was solid. Anthony Bowens versus Jungle Boy. Max Caster's on fire as usual, teasing Jungle Boy about not being good on the mic and referencing Anna Jay as his girlfriend. So there's still bits and pieces of, like, you know, you leave her with seven men, which, you know, it's just a little tongue-in-cheek thing, and I'm not, you know, outraged by it, but I just, anyway. I don't know. There's a lot. Anyway, it was fine. Look, I love Max Caster, and this was good. He's a heel. He's saying heelish things. Bowens is improving in the ring quite a bit each time we see him. Jungle Boy submits Bowens in a snare trap and stands tall. Bobby Fish comes down and attacks Jungle Boy, which I've written down here, Undisputed Era tease, which gets addressed almost immediately. Yeah, overall, I thought this would have been a little same-same-ish if we didn't get the Bobby Fish twist at the end, because he comes down, knocks out Jungle Boy, and then Christian Luchasaurus come down for the save. I thought overall this was good. It was 3 stars. Video package for Hangman and Kenny, brilliant, 4 stars. Super Click promo now. Adam Cole introduces Bobby to the Young Bucks. Matt Jackson says, yeah, we know him, man. Which I heard criticism about Adam Cole introducing them to the Young Bucks, but then it's immediately addressed. So I think they did this on purpose to show up how dumb other booking is in other places. And if you didn't get that, then I'm not quite sure. I don't know. I mean, that's very much a Bucks Elite dig. I loved it. I thought it was, you know, it was like, oh, hey, here's Bobby Fish. They're like, yeah, we know Bobby Fish. Like, we know him really well. Like, wrestled with him and against him in Ring of Honor. He was in your faction in WWE for fucking 7 years. Yeah, liked it. Cole asked Bobby Fish to take care of Jungle Boy on Rampage, but leave a little bit left over for him on Full Gear. I loved all this. I thought it was great. Matt Jackson says in the promo, it's undisputed. The era right now is the era of the Elite. This is all great. This is all great. It gives the marks all the little tidbits that they want. And I think, you know, they may genuinely be setting up Undisputed Era in AEW. We'll see, but I think that might be happening. I loved all of this, 4 stars. Wheeler Yuta, who... I feel like I'm a bit harsh in my head about Wheeler Yuta because he's not Trent. And they've had to basically sort of replace Trent. You know, it's like when the Beatles came to Australia and Jimmy Nicol replaced Ringo for like a week and a half. I feel like that's what Wheeler Yuta here is in The Best Friends. You know, it's like, it's not his fault that he's not Ringo, but also he's not Ringo, so please go away. And I just have that kind of feeling every time he walks out to the ring. If he disappears from The Best Friends and goes off and does his own thing, I'm much more interested in that than him being this replacement for Trent, you know. Anyway, it doesn't really matter because he's up against Wardlow, and Wardlow's going to kill him. JR Watch here. JR banging on about tent poles and big guys. So he says in this, you know, there's a lot of talk about tent poles and whatnot. And, you know, it's a lot of talk and no one knows what they're talking about. But Wardlow would have to be one. Look at him. He's so big. It's like, it's such WD. It's interesting. Like, you know, I talk about this all the time. The people who get indoctrinated and the people who don't. And I think the people who get indoctrinated in WWE a bit are just a bit thick. And I think that's what happened. You know, like, JR will constantly reference. It's like he's never quite. You know, I've read both of his books, and he constantly sort of talks about how his parents, especially his father, never really respected pro wrestling. Even after all of the things that JR's done in the industry, and, you know, it just felt like the way he writes about it, that he just never got that respect from his dad. And he still, to this day, comes across as someone who is embarrassed to be a part of pro wrestling. And the less believable it is, the less inclined he is to enjoy it. And so is now in a position where he just won't put it over. Like, if he doesn't like it, he just won't put it over. But talking to Sir Kayfabe about it today, even Matt, who's a lot more generous with JR than I am, is like, oh man, it's so hard to listen to at the moment. He just doesn't put anything over. You know, he's talking about Jungle Boy's beard. He's talking about how Wardlow is a pillar, not the four other, you know, like essentially dismissing the four pillars and MJF, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, and Sammy Guevara. You know, it's like, oh, well, it shouldn't be these little guys. It should be this big giant guy. You're like, man, you're just so indoctrinated with the WWE way of thinking about things, which he had a big hand in coming up with. You know, like, they've got to be sports people. Like, if they're ex-footballers, great, you know, like. And this has nothing to do with Wardlow. I like Wardlow. I think Wardlow will be a big part of AEW's future, and maybe he'll be part of the next four pillars that come up underneath, you know, the ones that we have at the moment. But you don't need to bury other people in when you're trying to put other people over. And this is the same guy who goes on his podcast and is constantly like, oh, these fucking internet dickheads don't know anything. They're constantly talking about people being buried and pished. Everyone's got to get their pish. Like, dude, that's how it fucking works. If you listen to anyone, I was on a fucking media call with Tony Khan this morning. He's using terms like push, you know? So I don't quite understand where he sits in the wrestling landscape anymore. He feels like an old man who is well out of his depth and doesn't, he, you know, looks at what's in front of him and doesn't like it. And as someone who has had to manage people in the past, the worst thing that you can have in a team is someone who just has a fucking negative attitude towards whatever your end goal is. And this JR is a classic case of that. You know, and if it isn't cut out, it can spread. It can be cancerous. So yeah, I just, you know, this was a breakout moment for Wardlow. I really thought it was. I really thought the crowd were like, oh, holy shit. Like, you got to see, you know, four power bombs in a row, destroyed Yuta. It felt like a coming out segment for him. But again, there's this bitter taste in the mouth because fucking JR's banging on about tent poles. It just, you know, again, can't wait for Rampage. As far as the commentary is concerned, I just die for Rampage every week. 3.5 stars for the match. There's a whole bunch of shit that goes on between the Matt Hardy office and Orange Cassidy, the best friends here. I'm not even going to bother explaining it to you because it's just, every time I think Orange Cassidy's getting out, he gets pulled back in. No one wants to see this feud. Please stop booking it. Please stop booking Matt Hardy. 0 stars. 0 stars for the beatdown. 3.5 stars for Wardlow's coming out party. Meanwhile, Punk and Eddie Kingston are in the backyard, in the car park, wanting to kill each other. I just thought this was really solid build. you get to see that, like, they're coming to the arena and they've bumped into each other in the car park, or, you know, they've seen each other in the car park, or Eddie's sought CM Punk out, or whatever the case may be. They don't explain that. They don't need to. They just show, hey, look, these guys saw each other and they tried to kill each other again. And for that, I'm going to give it 3.5 stars. It's just good storytelling, keeping the story simmering along. Brilliant. Dante Martin and Leo Rush versus Matt Sydal and Lee Moriarty. Now, if even 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, you told me that I would really be into this match and then about to give this match the score that I will, or the rating that I will at the end of it, I wouldn't have believed you. But I just thought the chain wrestling in this match was phenomenal, and then mixed in with the amount of high flying that everybody in this match could do, I was actually quite impressed by Lee Moriarty holding his own with the other three people in this ring, considering all of their athletic abilities. Leo Rush is repaying... Tony Khan on the media call this morning actually spoke at length about Leo Rush and his faith in him. And I just thought in this match he paid, like, repaid it already. I had a love-hate relationship with Leo Rush in WWE, and I think it was he was booked for you to hate him. But I thought the work that he did with Bobby Lashley probably gave... the idea of MVP coming in later on. But I just thought he did great work there, and I think he's going to be a really great pickup for AEW. Interesting to see where this story goes. I think eventually it'll be a Leo Rush versus Dante Martin story. But I think as a tag team, maybe, you know, they could be really interesting to watch. You know, and having said that, Leo Rush and Tony Khan have made me interested in wrestlers that I just wasn't in that invested in before. So I'm now a bit more invested in Matt Sydal. I've seen what Dante Martin can do. Maybe I'm late to the party. I'll put my hand up on that. But, and even Lee Moriarty, you know, it's like you look into him, you see that he's wrestled in GCW, you see he's wrestled in Ring of Honor. And you can see that he can hold his own here as well. All great stuff. 4.5 stars for this match. I mean, there's plenty of good stuff on this match. I would definitely, if you haven't watched it, I would go and watch it on Fight or wherever you're watching your wrestling, because this was just phenomenal stuff. All right, let's try and pump through the rest of this pretty quickly because we've got a bit to get through. Miro promo says this match with Bryan Danielson, it's nothing personal. Bryan Danielson's just in the way of him seeing his wife. I said this last week, and I'm going to say it again. Miro's promo is brilliant. I think Bryan Danielson might lose to Miro. I think this might be the shock on the Full Gear card. Maybe Okada, the Rainmaker, gets involved somehow. I don't know. I hope not, because I hope it's a clean finish. If you're going to... But, I mean, also Bryan Danielson has just been wrestling such great matches. I mean, it shows that it's been great booking, because I don't know who's going to win. And I would be happy with either result. Yeah, who knows, man? Like, there's a part of me that's like, I think it would be... Bryan Danielson can lose and not lose any momentum. The only thing that we'll get is some trolls going like, AEW don't know how to book. But it makes more sense. Yeah. I mean... They would have had to have made late changing plans for Miro to go into the title picture against Hangman Page. Well, let's say Hangman Page does beat Kenny Omega. It makes more sense for Miro to go up against Hanger, right? Anyway, we'll see. It's going to be amazing. 4.5 stars for this promo as well. Just brilliant stuff. Dax Harwood versus Pac. Hard-hitting mat wrestling. Really enjoyed this. Both get opened up. Wasn't crazy, but still, you know, some crimson masking happening. Pac hit a shotgun drop kick from the top rope that Dax sold amazingly well. Genuinely thought he was dead for a second. Dax then hits a brain buster, which was a nice little, you know, shout out to the Four Horsemen. I think, and you know, I'm actually, I'll save that for the end of this match. Dax then hits a brainbuster. We went through that. Dax hits a Liger Bomb. Pac kicks out. That was the point where I was totally hooked into this match. Pac gets Dax in a brutalizer and gets the submission immediately, which is cool. It's cool to see submission moves being given, given the respect that they deserve in AEW. Lights go dark. Black, Andrade, and FTR are standing tall. They beat down Pac. Lucha Bros and Cody come out. Cody gets a huge pop. Cool. I don't hate Cody, but I don't know. Maybe it's testament to the fact that people have been watching such poor booking for such a long time that you can have weird, sort of mediocre at times, spotty, all over the place booking like Cody's in AEW, and people will still accept it because it's just so much better than what they've been dealing with previously, you know? There's a few things in here. JR again calling Pac a veteran when he's only 35 years old does my head in. He's calling everybody a fucking veteran. It's like, no, we're the young company. AEW is the young company. Stop calling people veterans. It makes people think of 60-year-olds. Stop it. And also, I think, here's a crazy notion. Malakai Black, Andrade, and FTR. Is there a chance that they could be the Four Horsemen? Hear me out. Andrade is Ric Flair's son-in-law, essentially. Yes, I know they're not actually married, Charlotte and Andrade, but it might as well be. You follow them on Instagram, they're always hanging out, him and Rick, blah, 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 blah. He could be the Ric Flair character. You've got Malakai is like the big brutalizer, heavy, and then FTR is essentially Arn and Tully. And then you could have Tully as the manager. I think that might be where it's going, man. Which I'd be really into. Anyway, this match was amazing. The beatdown and stuff, into that as well. 4 stars. Really enjoyed it. MJF and Darby video promo. Really enjoyed this as well. More of the same of what we've had the last few weeks, but I really enjoyed it. 3 stars. And oh man, here we go. We've got the contract signing, Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. Two men sit down across from each other and talk about the last year. Hangman tells us that when Kenny beat Hanger last time, he said, "Well done, Hanger, I'm proud of you." And Hangman says, "That was a lie. You lied to me about that. You lied to me about so many things. But I realize now that the lies, they just come from fear. Because you didn't want me to have a fire lit under me. You didn't want the best that Hangman Page has got to come after you because you were afraid of me." Kenny then says that the cowboy shit that everybody loves so much is because of him, not Hanger, and that every time he would get down, because these people would never see him behind the stages, every time he'd get down and self-doubt himself and have be full of insecurity, it was Kenny Omega that put him back on the horse, not himself. Hangman signs the contract and says, "Doesn't matter what you think anymore. I'm not listening to what you've got to say because I'm signing this contract and I'm beating you at full gear." And then Kenny's like, "Okay, cool, man. Let's just shake hands like gentlemen and just let's kill it at the pay-per-view." They shake hands and then all of a sudden a cameraman hits Hanger with a camera, drops the camera, takes his beanie and fake beard off, and it's Don Callis. The Invisible Hand. Don Callis cuts a short promo and says the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was making people think that he didn't exist. And that's what Don Callis has done for the last 6 weeks. He's been stuck in his basement making sure that people thought that he would disappear. But he's back and he'll be at Kenny's ringside at full gear. They pull Hanger up and he's now bleeding. There's a crimson mask. And Kenny Omega dips his fucking finger into the blood and then signs the Full Gear contract in the blood of Hangman Page. Oh my God, 5 stars. Just when you think that this story couldn't get any better, they cut a promo like this. Man, the the stadium for Full Gear is going to be absolutely rocking. The roof will come off it when Hangman Page comes to the ring. I can't wait to see how they do it. Just another thing, a really quick little thing that they did that I really liked was Tony Khan expelling the Elite and Dark Order from the building, which allowed for a long-form promo, but it also allowed for Don Callis to sneak in and do this sneak attack. Just great. All of it was great. 5 stars. Loved it. I think this is the first 5-star rating I've given since the return of the star rating, and I think it's thoroughly deserved. Great work to everybody involved. Fantastic. All right, let's quickly get onto the media call that I was a part of with Tony Khan this morning. There was a question about Bray Wyatt coming to AEW. Tony Khan said that he hasn't spoken to him about a contract at all. Last time he saw him was at Chris Jericho's birthday party, which was last year. I don't believe that. and that they get along, but there's been no talk of him coming to AEW. I think this was set up. I think this question was set up, or maybe not the question was set up, but the answer is definitely a set up. Because I can't believe that. I mean, maybe look, put it this way. If Bray Wyatt doesn't show up on Sunday, then, or Wyndham doesn't show up on Sunday, then Tony was telling the truth. But I can't believe that he hasn't shown up anywhere and hasn't signed for anyone. I mean, there was some mention in the media call today that he's doing some movie stuff, which maybe he is, but I think we might see him show up on Sunday or Saturday for our northern neighbours. The New Japan relationship with AEW was spoken about, and Tony, you know, has sort of addressed this in the past, but was like, yeah, look, we definitely have a relationship with New Japan and it's improving all the time. Admitted that when he first started that New Japan were very frosty towards him, and basically thought that he was going to try and sign all of their American talent and then not allow them to use them, but then has realized over the last, you know, New Japan have realized over the last 2 years that he's not going to do that, and they've learned to trust him and now have a really great relationship, and he expects that to grow even more. And then, you know, on Dynamite we saw essentially Okada's going to come and wrestle. So, and the amount of Japanese wrestlers who have shown up on AEW have grown and grown over the last 6 months as well. So that was interesting. He also had a swipe at the WWE rumors that he did come out and say WWE put rumors out there saying that they had a relationship with New Japan, which he thought was hilarious because he had, you know, and then came out and did that promo. But that all of that was true. It wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a work, it was a shoot, brother. That AEW do have a relationship with New Japan, and if New Japan had signed any sort of deal with WWE, it was news to him because he knew, you know, that he had storylines lined up for the next 12 months with New Japan wrestlers. So, can't trust WWE, what a surprise. There will be shows on the West Coast of America as of next year, that they haven't done that as yet because they were trying to fulfill the shows that they had booked on the East Coast once things opened back up. And he said that he expects one of the 4 pay-per-views to be in LA, and also looking to have All Out in Las Vegas. Should have taken a note of that, seeing I was on the media call. But anyway, there'll be 2 of the 4 pay-per-views will be on the West Coast next year. And then the news that sort of come out of this media call that I was a part of was the women's division. There were 2 separate questions about the women's division. The first one that was, first question was asked was, to be fair, she didn't really get to ask the question. And it was, you know, being in the room, I was a little bit like, oh, Jesus. So she, I wish I knew the woman's name. I didn't take a note of the other journalist's name, so I'm sorry. But this woman who was from a wrestling podcast, I think, was like, oh, I just wanted to ask you about the wrestling division. And he jumped in straight away. Oh, and no, she was like, you know, NWA, we've seen other promotions do all female shows and blah, 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 blah. You know, in regards to AEW's women's division, do you plan to do more? And he basically cut her off and was like, look, I just want to point out that there were a lot of women on that show that I paid for them to be on there because they're AEW talent. He got very defensive. I mean, the point that he made was valid. It was like, okay, well, NWA's put on this Empower show, but there were, you know, AEW talent on there. So, and he felt like NWA didn't give them any credit for that, which was like, okay, cool. That is, you know, if that's, if you're saying that's what the case is, that's fine. It just probably could have handled, probably could have just handled the question with a little more tact. It just, I saw someone say tone deaf was the way that this question was handled. I don't know if it, I don't think it, being in the room, it didn't come across as tone deaf. It came across as someone who has had to answer this question over and over again and is getting a little bit sick of it. I would say, though, the way that you can stop the question coming up is probably by booking the women a little bit more. I mean, there was a second question in regards to the women's division, and he handled that with aplomb and talked about the TBS title and that he has big plans for that tournament, and you know, he thinks that he's put his best female performers in that and expects that title to be the equivalent of the TNT title, which is a very important title. And that's all fine. And I agree with him. I think what people, you know, and both of these questions were asked by women. And it's obviously something that's on female fans' minds. And, you know, I don't think Tony was being a dick or that he has some sort of vendetta against female performers. I mean, he keeps signing them, and you know, I mean, that's obviously not the case, but I think people probably want to see a bit more, and it's sort of surprising to even say this, but have the AEW female division booked a bit more like the WWE division, where we're seeing more main events, more storylines, and the matches given more time. It's difficult to do when you've only got 3 hours of TV a week, but you just got to make it happen. You just have to. I think that they have been doing, I think Tony has been doing more in the last 6 months than he has done previously. But, you know, when Matt was on the podcast and we've done it ourselves, there's not enough female wrestling on the show. There just isn't. And that may be to do with how green the roster is as well. I can understand that. So, yeah, it was a bit awkward in the room, to be sure. But I think both the questions were valid and the answers had some validity as well. I think the questions are like, hey, man, when are we going to see more female wrestling? Like, just in terms of length, you know, of matches and stuff. And Tony got very defensive about that. And I think, you know, he just needs to be, and AEW just needs to be a bit more transparent. Just like, look, you know, this is the reasons why. I know he's answered the question previously, but the question is going to keep coming up if nothing changes. But he wasn't, I don't think he was tone deaf, and I don't think he was, you know, demonstrative or anything like that. You know, I was in the room. I heard the conversation. I just think it's an awkward conversation to have, and it was dealt with fairly well the second time. The first time, I think, maybe talking over the top of a woman to explain why she, you know, that the question was probably not wrong, but, you know, that like she hadn't done enough research or something on those lines. I mean, that was kind of the vibe that came across, is not great. I think if he had his time over again, he probably would have handled that quite differently. and did. Had a different female journalist come in and ask a question, and he handled it a lot better the second time around. So, so that was essentially everything that was covered. I mean, there was some talk of Eddie Kingston, how much he's improved, and Ricky Starks, and how much faith he has in both of them. And Leo Rush got a big mention as well. And it was just, it was a very nice call to be a part of. And I thank Tony and AW for the opportunity. All right. We're at the 40-minute mark, so let's try and get through this preview quickly so we can all go home. The card I've got here in front of me is in no particular order, so let's just go through it. So we've got Nyla Rose and Jamie Hayter versus Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa. I assume something will happen on Rampage that will explain to us why that match is happening. I don't know. I assume that'll probably be a screwy finish of some description. Shida and Rosa will feud maybe afterwards. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that match at all. Next up, we've got Dr. Britt Baker with Rebel and Jamie Hayter versus Tay Conti, who will be with Anna Jay. Britt Baker will win this. I feel like the build has been okay to this, but it hasn't been superb, and so therefore I'm not overly invested in the match, but I think on the day it will be a fun match to check out. The Inner Circle versus Men of the Year. Well, Inner Circle will get the win here. This is in a Minneapolis street fight, as I say, so it'll be a bit of a cinematic match. I expect it to be in the middle of the card, and it'll be a bit of fun. Lucha Brothers versus FTR for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. I think FTR might win this and go on to be double champions. It'll be a really good match in the ring, that's for sure. CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston. Ooh, baby. Man. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to go with CM Punk as the winner. But I imagine that maybe these guys will continue to feud afterwards. I'm not sure how that will go down in ring. Maybe CM Punk puts Eddie to sleep and then it's, you never actually tap me out. Something along those lines. Christian Cage and Jurassic Express versus the Super Click. I expect in a Falls Count Anywhere match, this will be a brutal knock them down all over the place match. I expect the Super Click to win just because Adam Cole was involved. We might get some Bobby Fish shenanigans in here as well. Pac and Cody Rhodes versus Malakai Black and Andrade El Idolo. Black and El Idolo better win. Otherwise, I'm going to be very upset. Or it could be Pac and Cody Rhodes and then we just... It's the end of the Codyverse. Which ones have I missed out on here? Oh, Darby Allin versus MJF. I mean, MJF hasn't lost. And I think they might try and push MJF towards the title picture soon as well. So I'm going to go with MJF here. Bryan Danielson versus Miro. As I was saying before, it's been booked so well that I could see that maybe Miro will win. But I'm going to go with Bryan Danielson. Just because it's Bryan Danielson. And then we've also... the main event will be Kenny Omega with Don Callis versus Hangman Page. And Hangman Page will finally overcome all of his demons and Kenny Omega to be the AEW World's Heavyweight Champion. Man, I cannot wait for this card. I mean, there isn't really... I mean, the Nyla Rose, Jamie Hayter... Shida Rosa match is a bit weird, but I don't know, there's still Rampage to go, so we might get some storyline there. But besides that, every other match on this card I'm into, even the Cody Rhodes one, which is a bit like, wow. I'm still into it. Even Inner Circle and American Top Team and Men of the Year, they've got me into. So yeah, I'm going to a watching party with a sometime contributor to my podcast, Paul, at his place, and there'll be a bunch of us watching it. So I'm going to try and get back to the studio and record a review of Full Gear, and of course the Rampage review will be out before that as well. Just as far as the NWA show goes, they're doing NWA stuff by showing pay-per-views instead of Power. I'm not canceled. Like, I'm not saying I'm never doing NWA again, but unless they're doing a proper Power episode, I'm just not going to review it because I don't have the time. And if Billy Corgan's going to put, you know, replays essentially up instead of a Power, I'm not going to give it a proper review. And Impact, I just don't have the time at the moment. I've had exams and all that sort of thing, but I do want to get back into the world of Impact. Hopefully, I mean, even if it's delayed, I'll try and do one. I'll try and do one for you this week, guys, because I really love watching Impact. I think it's a great show, and they've got a whole bunch of new talent in there, and I want to check them out. So I'll do that for you guys as well. Anyway, look, this has been another bumper episode. Again, thanks to Tony Khan and the AEW guys for allowing me on the media call this morning. Hopefully I'm allowed on the second one after bringing up the women's division. And I'm sure I will be. And look, until next time, brother dudes and dudettes, brother friends, may your wrestling be good wrestling, and good night.